Welcome back to the second hour of Love Babs Love Talk. As I said, I'm delighted to have Rebecca Goodhart from Elm Shakespeare. Hey, Rebecca.
Good morning, Babs.
And it's nice to see you.
It is so good to see you. I am digging your hair.
Listen, old ladies got to do what they can. Do what they can.
Oh, please. Whatever. I just love the color. Yeah.
Thank
How
you.
are you
Thank
today?
You know, it's Friday. Got the whole weekend in front of me. Listen, it's all good. I'm good.
That
How are
sounds
you?
good. I am so excited. I'm just on fire. We are busier than, as my mother used to say, a one-armed paper hanger.
So I'm delighted to see that you're y'all are doing Tina Packer's Women of Will.
Yeah.
What is this about? I'm intrigued by this so much.
Oh, well, it's, you know, and it's really a big thing. This is something that Tina Packer, who was the founder of Shakespeare and Company in Lenox, Massachusetts, and is, you know, a worldwide, she's just a phenomenon. And she's been a dear friend and my mentor for, you know, 30 years now, you know, and we won't tell that story. But she and I have worked together for many years, and she developed this show over 20 years. She had
Wow.
a Guggenheim Fellowship. She had a Bunting Fellowship. She,
Wow.
like, this was a really big thing. And it became an off-Broadway show and had rave reviews. And then she turned it into a book. And then she took it on national tour. And the time has come that she wants, and she and I both agree that it's a really important, I think there's a lot of things that are important and fun, and it should live on. And so she decided that I would be the first person to be allowed to do it. So it's sort of like a second premiere. And it's, of course, my debut. I have not actually
That's what I was gonna say. Do it, like, do it. You're doing it, but
do
you're
it.
in it, in it.
I'm in it. I am performing it. She's directed it. And, you know, I performed for many, many years, and I am a performer, and I've just been too busy with Elm doing, making sure everything's going well, that we're finally at a place that I can go back to the stage. And so it's time for New Haven to get to know me as the actor that I am. So it's really exciting.
So are y'all doing this as part of your repertoire for the season, or is this its own standalone production?
It is a standalone production, so there's only four times you get a chance to see it, but it's part of a larger series. So because I know many people saw on the news, we were incredibly fortunate. Alexander Clark really believes in what Elm Shakespeare Company can be. And so he gave an initial, since, you know, really significant investment gift. And we have doubled our programming this year thanks to that. So not only are we doing our Shakespeare in the Park, which we always do, and this year will be Richard III, which I'm very excited about.
I saw the pictures, yes.
Oh, they're very, it's going to be very, very spooky. But then we've actually brought back Building a Brave New Theater, which was our online event series that was designed to be able to look at issues that are appropriate and really challenging our world today. What is Shakespeare's relevance? And so what we've done is taken that from just an online series to being a full event series. So Women of Will is part of a spring series of events that look at gender through the lens of Shakespeare and Shakespeare through the lens of gender. So it seemed like the perfect show to do. So yeah, there's only four performances, but it is part of a larger thing.
So Rebecca, would you say William Shakespeare was good to women characters? Like, did he capture women, or was he sexist? And, or, I mean, do you think he had a good voice for women? Did he give women good voices?
Well, this is what this play is about, which is why I'm so exciting, because it depends on when you're talking about. His writing of women really changes over the course of his career. And at the beginning, one of the things I love, one of the things I say in the play is, what can we say? He was a young man. He was a young playwright. And he was steeped in a paradigm of patriarchy, right? So his early women, you've got Kate from Taming of the Shrew, you
Which
know,
I loved.
Which he's fabulous. But on the other hand, that final speech is a real challenge. Like, how do you say, what you oweth to your husband? Then he goes all the way through, and he really, I think he is good to women. And I think what happens is he starts to embody their voices more and more, and he becomes attuned to who they are. And suddenly, unlike any other playwright at that time, you've got real, live, breathing human beings. We care about Juliet's passion and her journey just as much, if not more, than Romeo's, right? I think she's smarter than Romeo, if you really, you know. And I think if you look at, like, if you look at Desdemona and Ophelia, it is mind-boggling to me. If I could go anywhere in history, it would be to see how that, there's this one scene between the two of them, how that played in an open air theater with 3,000 people all around, played by two men, right? We have to remember they were being played by men. And yet it is the most deeply feminine. It's feminine language. It's feminine thought. It's intuitive. It's relational. It's not this real goal oriented. So he starts becoming really, really steeped. And I think he ends up at a place that's really remarkable, which is that if that the daughters, all the late plays, all of the daughters redeem the sins of the fathers. So you have all these grown children coming back to right the world and to use feminine energy to help heal and to help bring harmony. So I think that, you know, was Shakespeare good to women? Yes, depending on when which play and where in his progress.
So lay out the play for me, because there's a lot of women in Shakespeare. Do you choose some? Do you give us? I mean, how does Tina Packer lay it out? I mean, she can't write about every single one of them, can she? Like, can she put them all on display?
This is Tina Packer, right? So you should know what we're doing is called the overview. And the overview is one night of theater. She has actually written five different plays, right? So she in the book, she actually outlines that there are five distinct stages in Shakespeare's writing. And she wrote a play for each one of them. And she does look at practically every woman. That's not what we're doing. There is, let me think about it. There's about four or five, there's about seven to eight women that we look at. You know, we start with Joan of Arc. We look at Margaret of Anjou, who is this incredible queen. We look at Elizabeth of Woodville, who is in Richard. She's in Henry VI's and Richard. We look at Juliet. I'm being a euphemism because I'm still a little getting used to being back on stage. I get to play all of these women.
Are you doing all of the women?
I'm doing all of, there's, it's one woman and then this incredible actor, Nigel Gore, who has worked with Tina for almost 20 years and is an incredible, he's this great British actor. And he and I have now started rehearsing. And so he's my partner in all of this.
Oh my gosh. So this is a tour de force thing. Like, this takes
a big
lot of
deal.
Energy,
yeah.
Rebecca.
I get to do all of these amazing. We get to do Desdemona and Rosalind from As You Like It. It's going to be a lot. There's a chunk of Lady Macbeth. Oh, I love Lady Macbeth. So much I love Lady Macbeth.
So now, do you have costume changes? And I mean, or like, how does it work?
Minimal costumes. Yeah, okay. It's minimal. I mean, because the thing is what happens is, Nigel and I walk the audience through this development in Shakespeare's writing, right? So we'll say, hey, let's look at this woman and listen for this. And then we do a scene. And then we say, that's what happened. And now that, we think, leads Shakespeare to this. So it's almost, it doesn't feel like a lecture. It feels like a play, but we're leading people through. And with each character, I'll put on a different piece. Do you know, there'll be a hat, there'll be a vest, there'll be a little, like an open dress. So you get the flavor. And there's simple lighting, and there's some beautiful sound. So it's super theatrical and really fun. And it, you go on this wild ride from very silly to super serious. It's just a fun, like, I love doing this. It's so much.
I see the enthusiasm. So of all the things to choose to come back, you know, all the things to sort of say, all right, I want people to see me in this. Do you feel like this is the absolute perfect vehicle to showcase all that great talent?
Yeah, I kind of do. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, this is an opportunity that comes once in a, you know, it's not an everyday opportunity. And the thing is because Tina and I have been such deep friends and colleagues for so many years, that she pushes me beyond, you know, and really she knows all of my foibles and can really direct me in a way that few people can. But it also allows me the luxury, the absolute luxury of not doing absolutely everything, right? Because I don't want to direct and act at the same time. It's two parts of my brain. And so I direct in Richard. So it becomes really hard for me to be on stage because I'm making sure everything else is happening really well with Elm. So this is a really incredible opportunity to work with a woman I love more than anything and who I respect deeply, and to allow somebody else to really take the helm in a way that made sense and wasn't a stress on the company.
I tell you what I love about this, because I've never heard of anybody centering Shakespearean women in any setting. Like, I mean, when we see Shakespeare, we always think of the men roles, and the women roles are so meaty, but they always get overshadowed with larger than life men and their struggles and all that other kind of stuff, that we forget that it's these women characters that really elevate these plays. So do you think, how does Shakespeare still be relevant all these years after these first plays hit the stage? Like, talk a little bit about that.
I love that question, because I think, you know, there's this really, we live in a time that can get really literal. Do you know? Mm-hmm. We like literal stories. And the thing about Shakespeare, and I think why Shakespeare's lasted for so long, I mean, this is not, I wish I could take credit for this thought. Harold Bloom said this too, which is that there's an ambiguity to Shakespeare, right? To say to be or not to be, that is the question. To say, stand and unfold yourself. These are, you know, and there's many, many, many examples. These are things that are not culturally bound. They're not time bound. They're not, they live, they talk about and they express our humanity on a really deep level. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what year you're in. It doesn't matter what sex you are. It doesn't matter what color of your skin, what God you worship, how much money you have in your pocket. It is about what does it mean to be a human being. And the way in which he wrote, which is a really unique thing, it only lasted, this style of writing only lasted for about 150 years. And it came out of an education system that only lasted for about that long period of time. I think there's a lesson there about the power of education. But that this language, and I think sometimes we get lost in trying to make it, again, literal, and to make it not poetry. And if you allow it to be poetry, what it does is it is designed to be heard, not read. And it is designed to be fully embodied, not just thought about. It's not simply intellectual. And so when you embody it, and when you speak it rhetorically for the ears, something, and when you bring your own humanity, your real, authentic, truthful, no matter who you are or where you are, something shows up and Shakespeare holds it. He will always take you where he needs to go, right? Juliet's always going to take the poison. Macbeths are always going to kill the king. But how you get there can be, there's an ambiguity, and there's a There's a lovely thing between actor and character, and you can be both an actor and audience, so we can all be together. So I think that Shakespeare allows us, it's why it keeps coming back and back and back. It isn't about men in pumpkin pants, or, old white men in pumpkin pants standing and speaking in Elizabethan speech. It's not about that. It's actually about, who am I? Stand and unfold yourself. So yeah, I think it can be really, I think how you do it is really important. I mean, because that's the other piece of the puzzle, is it's been used for something very different, right? It can also be used to shut people down. It can be used to tell you you're stupid, or you don't understand, or this is high culture and it's not for you. Like, and it has been used for that. And that is awful and wrong. So I think we need to separate out what Shakespeare is from how Shakespeare is used and how Shakespeare is done. And of course, we want to use Shakespeare for the good. We want to use Shakespeare to uplift and to include and to speak that. Oh, my goodness. I almost lost my plants. I
Don't
got
do
too
that.
excited. Anyway, so yeah, the short answer is yeah, I think it's relevant.
And do you like, Rebecca, do you like when Shakespeare is reimagined? Like, I saw Shakespeare in the Park a few years ago in New York, and they put a Nigerian slant on it, and it was wildly amazing. The language was there, but it was set in a Nigerian setting,
Yeah.
and it was just incredible. It was so engaging. Like, I wanted to, I want, I sat, we sat there and we were like, I want to see it again. Like, I want to see it all over again. I never feel that way about a lot of things, but that was one of the things I was like, I mean, it was just amazing. So do you like when Shakespeare is reimagined and put in different settings and people sort of, mess around with it a little bit? Do you like that?
Yes, and what I will say is yes, absolutely yes. I should say yes, and yes, if it's done well, right? Because it can be super, whatever the thing is, we don't know what traditional is. Traditional, that when people talk about traditional Shakespeare, they're talking about actually about 100 years ago, right? We're like, it's just something that people got used to. I think putting it, that's that ambiguity I'm talking about. It can hold so much. I've had the incredible pleasure. I worked down in Brazil for a while and got to see Brazilian Shakespeare. I've seen, I'm dear friends with the Prague, folks at Prague Shakespeare. I've seen it in Germany. And the thing is, the rest of the world, and I think part of it is because it's in translation, but the rest of the world doesn't hold Shakespeare as this precious, special thing to be revered and scared of, right? They just treat him like a playwright, and they do lots of fun, crazy things with him. So why don't we do that? And I think that's what you're talking about. Setting it in Nigeria, I mean, you saw what we did with Merry Wives of Windsor last year, right? That was wild. We did Comedy of Errors, like in Dr. Seuss land. So I think that it can hold anything that's going to help ensure that everybody is included and hears themselves and see themselves and raises the story up. And that's where the if comes in. If you spend so much time in the name of accessibility, taking something and cramming it into a metaphor that doesn't work, we're going to put it on space, we're going to do it, whatever. There's been a million bad Shakespeare productions that are concept productions, right? But there's probably been even more bad traditional productions, right? Shakespeare's hard. And so, yeah, put it anywhere you want. Use these, I hate to say it, but he's dead, right? We can do whatever we want with these words.
I love it. So in talking about the women of Will, and I love the title, The Women of Will, we are post Me Too movement, right? Which I don't even know what that means. Like, women are still up against it, but
Thank you.
You know, we're still having battles and fights and all the things, and there's still glass ceilings after glass ceilings to be shattered. A play like this comes along, or a body of work that comes along like this, does it elevate the conversation? Does it have a place in that conversation? Do women feel like, okay, finally, you know, we've got some, I get to be in it, I get to Shakespeare gets to come alive for women in a way that it hasn't before.
Well, I sure do hope so. I mean, that is, I think, one of the main things that Tina and I are trying to do. Although it's been really interesting because, of course, she started writing this almost 20 years ago, and the world has changed.
Yeah.
And so we've changed some things, right?
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, we've changed. I don't want to give too much away. We look at different ways that Taming of the Shrew might make sense in today's world,
Oh.
and there are,
Oh, now this I have to see.
how do you say those? How do you say, even, such duty a subject owes the prince, even such a woman oweth to her husband. How do you say that as a 21st century woman, right? And we actually look at four different ways, and we've added, well, I'll give this up. We started looking at, because there's been a lot in the news lately about women's voices right after the State of the Union.
Yeah.
So we take on the Baby Fundy voice and see what happens if that shows up,
Oh my gosh.
So we get into it, we really do. We also look at, we talk about, we even mention the Me Too movement because there's a moment in the play and we think, well, is that a Me Too movement? And what happens, we talk about, is Shakespeare good to women, is that he starts giving women agency, and it's really clear when he does it, and it changes things because it starts teaching the men. And so the men start learning and the men start changing when the women have agency and have a voice and can speak up. And so we talk about that in the play. And we talk to the audience and ask, who thinks that it's okay to do something, to use your sexuality to get what you want? This isn't your grandma's Shakespeare. We
Oh,
want to, the point of that is,
Rebecca.
are these plays relevant today? If these plays are just a museum piece, I'm not interested in doing them. I'm just not.
Ooh, that's a
So,
hard question. Like, those are hard. I mean, you have to sit with that a little bit. And I think every woman has to reckon with that sort of thing.
yeah. And we actually look at, and this is probably something we should say, we do look at sexual assault, and we look at violence against women. And so, it's probably a 13 and older show. The littlest little guys probably don't, this isn't our Midsummer Night's Dream that we do in the park. We ask big questions and we dig in and we look at what do the women in Shakespeare have to say and what can we learn from them? And how did they change Shakespeare? Because I think they did. I think
Wow.
he learned from them,
I
so.
mean I love it because I mean there are some people who think, you know, wrestling with Shakespeare is like wrestling with the Bible, right? Like it's you know,
It's a
it's
sacred
like,
text.
yes, like it's just sacred. Like, what are you doing? No, don't do that, you know. But I think for its relevancy, that, you know, you have to do just what you said, like look at this from some different angles and what it would look like in this moment to see these
Yeah.
words.
What do these words mean? Although I will say, it's funny. I've changed over 20 some years as well. If you had said you could change a word in Shakespeare 20 years ago, I would have said it was heresy. It would have been like changing the Bible, right? And now there are things that don't always translate, and that a word here or a word there. We decided last 2 summers ago when we were doing Tempest, the word slave shows up 5 times in the play. And I chose to cut the word because unless we were going to unpack it and have the play be about that, all it was going to do was have everybody in the audience stop listening to what the story was. And because that word is so loaded, right? That word has a weight to it. Mm-hmm. So that was an example where we changed a word. Most often we don't. And what is really interesting, and it's not that I had forgotten this, but to go back and do the work of an actor is such a gift. And I love it so much. But so you dig into this text and you start taking this language in, and it starts coming down into your body. And then what my job is then to see what is there so specifically that it propels me into the thoughts and into the meanings that it needs. So it really is a process of how I think we find the relevance for today is to be really, really interested, dig in specific, deep work in the text that's there. And then on occasion, if there is something, because say, you know what, it's a playwright and we change plays all the time. And maybe we need to change it. Because guess what? He changed it too, right? We have proof that there are revisions to the plays. And so he would get a new actor, he'd change it, you know? So why he would be changing? You don't think he would be writing about me too? Please. he would be all over some of this stuff, right?
Now, do you think Shakespeare was ahead of his time?
I mean, yes.
To me, a lot. It seems like he was way ahead of his time on a lot of it. When I see a Shakespeare performance now, I was like, man, this feels so right now. Like, this feels so relevant.
Don't you know? Yeah. Sometimes it's weird how it is. You're like, wait a minute. I love, you know, there's certain things, like there are certain jokes in Shakespeare that are just funny. And they're funny. And I think, you know, we just don't change that much.
I don't know what that says about mankind. Our own evolution.
a good fart joke is just funny. It always is. It just always.
Whether it was 100 years ago or 100 years from now,
it doesn't matter. You know. That said, I think that there is. I think he understood humanity in a way that he could give space, right? Mm-hmm. That everything he does leaves room for more. So that it's that thing that he fought, that literal. If you look at the people that are writing at the same time as he did, suddenly you're like, you're in Elizabethan mind frame, right? You look at, I mean, my thought is compare the Jew of Malta, which is Marlowe, to Merchant of Venice.
Mm. Mm.
Right? One has like all of the preconceived notions, all of the stereotyping, all of the, you know, it's impossible. I can't watch Jew of Malta, you know, it is never done anymore. Whereas Merchant of Venice has the same hatred, but does it in a way that you can look at it from both sides.
Yeah.
Right? And you go, yeah. Oh, wait a minute. So, you know, it going back to women, Kate, you know, she says, such duty a woman oweth to her husband. But she also, in the same play, says, I must tell the anger of my heart, for concealing it, my heart will break. So we see the cost as well, you know, so he goes on both sides. And I think that's the thing that has him be ahead of his time, is that it allows us to come at it from wherever we are. You know, and it is that more and more because of the world we live in, and I think it's important, I try to focus less on the man that was, you know, the glove maker's son that was living in Stratford, you know, the old dead white guy, and look at what he created. You know, and if we can hang out with the plays, but it's really hard because the plays were created by something or someone. You know, he wrote, he also, there's this amazing thing is if you look, there's a particular edition, the Arden, and all right, I'm going to geek out on you for just a minute. Bear
That's
with
all
me.
right. Geek out
So,
away.
when Shakespeare writes, right, he wrote, and it was the foul papers, which were his handwriting. Then he gave it to the theater. They copied it over, and those were the fair papers. It got published, and it would get published in a small book called the quarto, and then eventually got published in a big book called the folio. And then there was modern editors. So what happens is modern editors all argue about which version, which edition you use, right? And sometimes they will say that they don't want to use the folio because this is the thing I love. It's contaminated by performance. Meaning, oh, he changed things because the actor said, Will, that doesn't work. Say it this way.
I love that.
So it's like, he wasn't just right. Like, I think maybe one of the reasons these work, the plays work, is because he wasn't the only one contributing.
I love it.
You know,
all
his,
right.
his, yeah, I don't know. It's, it, you know, you can, this is the stuff that doctoral theses are written on, and
oh,
you
did
know,
you did a damn good job. Like you could teach a master class on this. It's really
I love it more than, you know, it's an occupational hazard. You spend you know 30 years playing with 37 plays. You start digging into that stuff. I do love it.
So let me just tell people the event is Women of Will. This is it's going to be from May 16th through the 19th at Southern Connecticut State University at the Lyman Center Theater Lab on Crescent Street in New Haven. Y'all know where it is. And you can get your tickets at elmshakespeare.org. Yeah, so come and see this. And then there's a post-show reception on the 19th. So if you go on the 19th.
The 19th is fancy. The 19th you can stay. And we're going to see, Tina is not unfortunately, awesomely. She's off in Venice at the Biennale.
If you have to be somewhere,
Tina,
you know, I mean, tough life.
Tough life. But we're going to see if we can get her to zoom into the reception. And okay. So she can say hi to everybody. It's just four performances. The other great thing to know is two special things. One is, thank you, Alexander Clark. Everyone under 21 is free to anything we do.
Wow.
Right? So no one under 21 pays for anything ever at Elm Shakespeare Company. Wow. So thank you, Alexander Clark. And two, our relationship with Southern Connecticut State University is important. And so there's half price tickets for anyone from Southern Connecticut State University if you happen to be over 21.
Okay. I mean, it's practically free.
Yeah. Well, people aren't, this is a new thing for Elm, right? People aren't used to us having year-round productions. They're used to seeing us in the summer. So we're really working to get the word out and have people realize, oh, Elm Shakespeare isn't just in the park.
Yeah. Because when I saw this, I will tell you, I was like, it's May. It's going to be cold outside. And then I was like, why are you making us come to the park? Like, May? Like, why? And then I was like, oh, let me read this more fully. I was like, oh, they're at the lab.
Shakespeare can be inside.
Shakespeare can be inside.
Although I remember back in the pandemic, we were the first company to be allowed to perform after, you know, when the masks, even in masks, right? It was the very beginning before anybody could gather. And so we said we were determined because we had lost the summer. And we went to the park and we did the Halloween show outside. And literally the day we were breaking everything down, it snowed. And I just thought, I'm done. Shakespeare in the park. I draw the line when it's snowing. No, this is inside. It will be very comfortable. It will be temperature regulated.
Rebecca Goodhart, it was a pleasure talking to you. I'm looking forward to this performance. I'm going to go to your website and get my ticket because I'm going to figure out which day I want to go. and I'm going to be in the audience because I really want to see this. I
It's
really
going to
want to
be
see
so
this.
much fun. So much
Yes.
fun. And I'm so thank you so much. I just love talking to you.
I love
It's
talking
been
to
a,
you. We must do this more often. This is really great.
you
But now,
got it.
before you go, does this open the door for you to perform more? Like, do you start thinking about another vehicle to another production down the road or?
Maybe. Could
Okay.
be. Oh, and I will be, I would be remiss because this is one of two professional productions that are happening as part of the Brave New Theater. And we are going to be, we're partnering with the Schwartzman Center at Yale for one night only. Lisa Volpe, who is playing Richard III this summer, she is bringing her one-woman show, Shakespeare and the Alchemy of Gender, which is just played to rave reviews at Oregon Shakespeare Festival. She's
Wow.
bringing it here for one night only, June 6th.
Ooh.
That's just not even quite a month, a little more than a month away. And people, I hope, will come and join us because there's only 70 tickets to that total.
Yeah.
So that's starting to sell out too. So I have to make sure I mention that.
That's a good mention.
And
Thank
to
you
say
so
thank
much.
you. We have always have to say thank you. We are in so much partnership, but CT Humanities and the Carolyn Foundation and the Elizabethan Club and the Whitney Center and the Schwartzman and Arts and Ideas and the Jewish Federation and New Haven Pride. So many community partners, I can't even stand it. So thank you to everyone. All right, I will
Well,
stop.
no worries. You gotta thank people when you can thank people. It's
Absolutely,
perfect.
so
I
important.
understand. So it was a pleasure, Rebecca. A
Thank
pleasure.
you
Do
so
come back
much.
again and let me know
I will.
when the next things happen. But I shall see this, the Women of Will. So
Next week,
next
one
week
week
it's
only. All
on.
right.
1 week only. Thank you, Rebecca. Have a good weekend.
Thanks. Okay, I will. Happy weekend.
All right.
Bye.
Bye bye. Bye bye. Bye bye. Harry Droz, thank you very much. Paul Bass, thank you very much. Harry Tell, Karen Droz, happy Mother's Day. And have a good weekend. And I know the grandchildren and the children will do right by her. And I know you'll do right by her too. Are y'all in town? So anyway, I'll see you on Monday, good people. Happy Mother's Day to all the women out there and the folks out there who are standing in the mother role. So I'll see y'all. Have a good weekend.
FM, streaming live at newhavenindependent.org.